Good evening. So nice to be back. It was a very nice session. Another very nice session. It was really cool. There were two in a row that were just superb. It was quite small, just about as many people as we are tonight. Everybody took turns cooking. You never knew what the food was going to be, but it was always good. And people just completely cooperated with each other in such a nice way that it went so smoothly. And if somebody couldn't do the do-on, somebody else would do the do-on. And there was just no fuss, no muss, just 7 straight days of sitting. We talked about the Bodhisattva vows, which is always a very interesting subject. We chanted every Tuesday night, so I thought, haven't thought about those for a long time, so let's look at them. And then when it was over, I was driven down to Albuquerque to the little desert mirror zendo, which is in a nice suburb in Albuquerque, started by one of Norman Fisher's students, two of Norman Fisher's students, actually, and by Joan Halifax, who has a Zen center in Santa Fe. So there's this sort of, and they've been up to Hokoji to sit one day sits. So there's a lot of mixing up of sanghas in a very nice way also. They love Hokoji. Of course, everybody does. It's just beautiful up there. It's outside of Taos, and it's up on halfway up the mountain. So when you walk outside, you can look back and see the mountains behind you. Bare granite bulges and often with big clouds behind. And then if you look the other way, you look far, far down into the floor of the valley, which is where Taos is, just little tiny houses way down there. So it's very vast views. And something's always happening in the weather. We had every kind of weather from beautiful, mild spring days, and all the birds came up, and then it got very cold, and the wind started to blow, and then we had a thunderstorm with thunder and lightning simultaneous right over the zendo, so we were quivering inside, waiting to be fried. And then it started to snow, so it snowed all one day. Beautiful, soft snow. And then for Buddha's birthday, the sun came out, and little children came, and we all poured sweet tea on the baby Buddha, and had a big feast afterward. Nice way to have a session. I recommend it. So I bring greetings from everyone. Greetings from Desert Mirror and greetings from Hokoji. And people want to come out here and check everything out here too. So I hope this mixing that's going on will mix all the way out to California. Actually, Ian, who is the priest up here up at Hokoji, was here at Jikoji while I was out there at his place. He was here with our place. So we're doing a bit of that already. Did anybody get up to this session? Not at all. Shame. I have one thing that I want to share with you that I forgot last time, and I think this is important. There's a student down in Santa Cruz who is giving practice series for people living with all kinds of pain. She worked with Darlene Cohen and was responsible with Darlene for that little booklet that I showed you a few weeks ago. And she's offering this in July and August, two Saturdays. So I will just leave this here, and you all can come after and get all the information. She knows a lot. She's been a Zen student for a very long time. She's a priest. Catherine Thanis, either Catherine or Darlene ordained her. And I'm sure this would be very worthwhile. Beata. Yeah. So now we have the first little paragraph of the Diamond Sutra. Does everybody have? Probably not. There was an introduction last week, week before last. Did everybody get that one? And there are copies of the sutra. Does everybody have a copy of the sutra? So what I'd like to do is cover the first two, because it's a scene. It's a very sweet scene. Why don't we read it around? It's just a few paragraphs. Want to start? You can be second.
Best I have heard. Once the Hagavan was dwelling near Shavasta, and Anandanda garden and jet of forest together with the whole assembly of 1,250 bhikkhus and a great many fearless bodhisattvas. One day before noon, the Hagavan, how do you say that?
Bhagavan.
So it is, you say the Hagavan. Put on his patched robe and picked up his bowl and entered the capital of Shravasti for offerings. After begging for food in the city and eating his meal of rice, he returned from his daily round in the afternoon, put his robe and bowl away, washed his feet, and sat down on the appointed seat. After crossing his legs and adjusting his body, he turned his awareness to what was before him. A number of the
bhikshus
then came up to where the Bhagavan was sitting. After touching their heads to his feet, they walked around him to the right three times and sat down to one side.
Two. On this occasion, the Venerable Saputi was also present in the assembly. Rising from his seat, he uncovered one shoulder and touched his right knee to the ground. Pressing his palms together and bowing to the Buddha, he said, "It is rare, Bhagavan, most rare, indeed, Sugata, how the Tathagata, the Arhan, the fully enlightened one, blesses fearless bodhisattvas with the best of blessings. And it is rare, Bhagavan, how the Tathagata, the Arhan, the fully enlightened one, entrust fearless bodhisattvas with the greatest of trusts. Even so, Bhagavan, if a noble son or daughter should set forth on the bodhisattva path, how should they stand, how should they walk, and how should they control their thoughts? The Buddha told the Venerable Subhuti, "Well said, Subhuti, well said. So it is, Subhuti. It is as you say. The Tathagata blesses fearless bodhisattvas with the best of blessings and entrusts fearless bodhisattvas with the greatest of trusts. You should therefore truly listen, Subhuti, and consider this well. I shall tell you how those who set forth on the bodhisattva path should stand, how they should walk, and how they should control their thoughts." The Venerable Subhuti answered, "May it be so, Bhagavan," and gave his full attention.
It's a very, very simple beginning. And Thich Nhat Hanh has a very nice way of seeing it, Red Pine also, that the Buddha doesn't say very much at all in this. He simply does what he usually does. It outlines very quietly how he goes and gets his food and comes back and gets his feet washed and all these things without saying anything. Just quietly, quietly being himself. Not being special, not being not special, just quietly actually teaching as he moved through his day. And his disciples were around, and of course keeping an eye on him and getting some sense from the way he was in the world of what of his mind. So then they got kind of fancy and decided that his gestures were based on the six paramitas, which is kind of funny, but it's interesting to think about it in that way. The six paramitas are the bodhisattva practices of generosity and ethics. My goodness. Generosity and ethics and effort or vitality and patience and meditation and wisdom. So the first one is the bowl. He went out with his bowl to, sometimes they say, offer people the opportunity to practice charity. We say begging. But you can turn it around and say you're giving people the chance to be generous. So that's the first paramita, generosity. And then he wore his robe, his monk's robe, which is the morality or the ethics of the protection of the Buddha's robe to keep the precepts. And then he went around asking, which requires patience and forbearance, because sometimes people would slam the door and sometimes people would throw things at them. So it was a very brave and patient thing to do, to hope to get something to eat for the day. And then eating and putting away his robe and washing his feet are examples of vigor. He just did it in his own way, quietly, carefully. And then he sat and focused in meditation and remained unattached and therefore was wise. So if you think about it in terms of our own life, how it is to get up and make food and wear clothes and go and meet what there is to meet with some kind of forbearance and endurance, we too lead this kind of simple life. And sometimes we're lucky and we can sit down in meditation and be wise. So the place where he was, the grove where he was staying, he stayed for quite a long time, and it was given to him. And it was given through charity. Many things were given to him in his life. And this one was quite a large piece of land that somebody wanted the owner to give to Buddha, and the owner said, no way. And then they got persuaded or kind of fooled into it. I've forgotten how it goes. Do you remember that story?
It was
gold.
But I forget how it was. You could fill the place if you could lay gold all the way down and you could cover it or something.
Yes. They covered the whole ground with gold pieces. Yeah. Yeah. So in that second section, Subhuti is the student who whose name means born of emptiness. So already you have a bodhisattva born of emptiness. And as I was researching bodhisattva, some say that bodhisattvas arise out of emptiness in order to help. And in this case, Subhuti was checking what he knew and asking Buddha about it. And Buddha spent then the next 19 little sections exposing what he knew and what he didn't know. So Tathagata means suchness, and gata means to appear. So it's the appearance of true nature, the appearance of wisdom. And it's often, as we say, we taste the truth of the Tathagata's words. It's Buddha's words. So Subhuti's question, what should they rely on and what should they do to master their thinking, is what Thich Nhat Hanh said about translated. And Red Pine said, how should they stand, walk, and control their thought? So this is about thinking. This is about everyday thinking and our self-consciousness, how we know who we and what we are. And Red Pine said, the purpose of this entire sutra is to break through the self, which the Buddha does without a word, and which Subhuti perceives. Wang Po says, most people allow their mind to be obstructed by the world and then try to escape from the world. They don't realize that their mind obstructs the world. If they could only let their minds be empty, the world would be empty. Don't misuse the mind. If you want to be free of the world, you should forget the mind. If you don't forget the mind and only get rid of the world, you only succeed in becoming more confused. Thus it is said, all things are only mind. But the mind cannot be found. When you can't find a thing, you have reached the final goal. Why go running around looking for liberation? This is how you should control the mind. Once you see your own nature, you won't have any deluded thoughts. Once you have no deluded thoughts, you've controlled your mind. this can be yours. That's enough. I just heard from somebody today among my 450 emails that she said, I got in my own way. I thought, yeah, that's exactly right. You know, it's what we do so often. There's nothing there that's getting in our way. It's we ourselves who are getting in our own way. But in the middle of a drama, it's very hard to see. So, are there questions? Comments?
So, you said that they circle Buddha on the right. So, it's the same way that we go around our cushions and our chairs.
Clockwise. Yes. And in India, they walk around stupas that way. They walk around Mount Kailash that way. Except for one little group that walks the other way. I don't know quite who they are, but renegades for sure. Sally?
And on the right side. Why clockwise? Why do they circle clockwise?
I'm not sure. I think it's a natural thing to do. Maybe because most people are right-handed. It just, for a right-handed person, I think it's the natural thing to do. It's how we're wired, maybe. But I'm not sure anybody really knows. Yeah.
We just, you know, just get it kicked out of the things that, you know, that we do has been done for so long.
Yes.
I figured, you know, I get confused when I read, but I figured that's what I visualized, you know, the clockwise, the same way, the circles. I just find it so interesting, and this is also how it happens. But we do it. So when we come sit on our cushion or get off our cushion, that's what we do. And then, you know, the same way that usually we walk in Zendo, or the way that you go to the altar.
Yes.
It's
yeah.
Very.
And of course, there are all kinds of picky rules that we don't even keep, like which foot to walk into the Zendo with and those kinds of things. And we never learned them until much later, and so I don't think most of Koban students are very particular about those things most of the time, unless they're in company. So breaking through the self is the subject of this little sutra. Breaking through the self that doesn't exist. So it's constantly pulling up something and then it dissolves in front of your eyes. And then something else is pulled up and then it dissolves in front of your eyes. And so it's a kind of tricking the mind over and over again to get to know itself, to feel how it works, and feel what is or is not behind it. Is there really something there? Is there a person, a self? Very interesting to slowly walk through this and feel how Subhuti is experiencing, bringing up things. Well, how about this? The Buddha says, ah, shh, shh, shh. Oh. So then something else comes up. This is the sutra that sent Wei Neng off to find a teacher. And this is the sutra that many, many people memorize and carry with them their whole life. So it's, I hope you'll find it inspiring too.